We're glad you're with us today. This podcast produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now, today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, and we're all about above average investing for the average investor to make you better. You know, to try to bolster your investment management skills. So we're ready for your questions. Any money matter that is on your mind, don't hesitate to ask. Remember, this is a call-in show. 888-99-CHART is the number. Now, each Friday, I go over our premium newsletter we send out into email boxes every Friday. I write this email every week, this e-newsletter. And this is one of the ways I provide some information and perspective to augment what we do on Invest Talk here. We think it's pretty handy, straightforward, to the point source of information that doesn't take a lot of time out of your day to read. And so on the first section, the main section, the current market conditions heading, I talked about the stock market. And if you'd like to try the newsletter for a month, just visit investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. There's a one-month refund offer if you're not completely satisfied. It's like less. It's $10 a month, $9.99. Remember, it comes out every Friday. And while we're talking about bolstering your knowledge, visit our recommended book section on investtalk.com. These are books that we can point to as being worth your time. I think they are. There are different categories: classics, fundamental analysis, technical analysis, economics, personal finance. And we handpick these books. So we don't get anything out of them. We just think these are really good books to learn from. Now, do you have any questions about good sources of information, about the market, about the economy? You can check in right now, 888-99-CHART, with any money questions. That's our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Siraj. How are you doing, Siraj, in Fremont?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thanks for calling.
I have 401k question.
Sure.
Generally, I reach a maximum limit by August, September time period every year. So is there any other options available where we can invest our pre-tax money?
Pre-tax money. You know, there's only the 401k. If you max out that, you're kind of stuck. If you do that, then you can't open up an IRA. You can't put up a Roth. You can't do anything. You're stuck. You max it out in your retirement 401k. You can put less in the 401k and open up an IRA, but as long as you don't make too much money salary-wise. But okay. No, Siraj, you're kind of stuck when you max out your 401k. Unless you're right. Self-employed. Are you self-employed?
No, I work for a company.
Okay. See, if you're self-employed, you can set up a different kind of retirement plan. But if you work for a company, you're kind of stuck. Sorry, Siraj.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go to Paul in Berkeley. How you doing, Paul?
Great. How you doing, Steve?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hey, my question is, I have a 401k through my employer. I have an IRA, which I opened myself. Now, I'm projecting at some point this year that between those two, the dollar amount will equal the minimum amount that I can come in and start working with you.
Okay.
Is it possible to take the 401k and take the IRA and...
Are you self-employed, Paul?
No.
Okay, so you work for an employer who provides a 401k.
Correct.
That 401k, you cannot have a person like me or a company like me manage it for you individually because you have to keep it where you are. You're stuck with their choices, and you can't move it out of there.
I'm not saying that. I'm kind of saying when the dollar amount reaches the level I need, can it be rolled over somehow?
Still working for them. The answer is no, not if you're still working. Once you stop working for them, you go work for somebody else, then you can roll it over to an IRA.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you're stuck. And, you know, and I really disagree with this. I think they should allow you to roll a 401k over into an IRA anytime you want to. Personally, that's what I think they should, but that's not the law.
Yeah.
Paul, sorry I couldn't help you, but give me a call if you want to talk about more details about that. I'll be happy to explain all that stuff.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
You work hard for your money. Why isn't it working harder for you?
In looking at the chart, do you have to look at this the opposite of like a normal stock?
Ask your question. 888-99-CHART is the number. This is InvestTalk on radio and InvestTalk.com. Our listener line is open 24-7 for your questions. Hear the answer live on radio and online 4 to 5 or the playback anytime on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go talk to Steve in Newport Beach. How are you doing, Steve?
Oh, very good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I have a question. I've been doing some married put positions recently and have very good success with them. But now the market's kind of changing, and I'm wondering what your take is on buying stock and also buying a put for protection in case it unwinds unexpectedly.
I like the options game. I do. I like selling puts, buying puts, depending on what stock you're talking about, whether you want to own it or you want to get rid of it. And it is very good. They call that insurance in my business. And I see nothing wrong with that, Steve. I think it's a technique a lot of people use successfully. And for everybody else out there, this means if you sell, if you do put options, they could put the stock to you. In other words, let's say you wanted to buy Apple, but you wanted to buy it when it reaches closer to the 200-day moving average. Well, you can buy an option that will put that stock to you at that price or below. Actually, at that price, but they might get it below. And you get a premium for it at the same time. So
yeah, you'd be selling a put to accomplish that.
Yeah. So someone would put the stock to you if it falls to that price. If it doesn't fall to that price, you get to keep the premium. Yeah, it might be $1 a share, I don't know, $2 a share, depending on how far out. There's a lot of issues. I don't really want to get into that, Steve, because, not too many people know how to do this. But as far as an investment strategy, I think it's very good. We do that in a small part of our portfolios, selling puts and the stocks we want to own. Because you get a premium.
Yeah, I'm not selling puts, I'm buying puts. I own the stock and I also buy a put.
Okay, so if you get to put it to somebody and protect your downside risk.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you don't mind if it doesn't go down there because you get to hold on to your stock and it didn't fall. So it's okay with you.
Yeah, it's if I buy the protection a little bit higher than what it's trading at, then I can hold it through a downturn without having to puke it up at the absolute bottom.
Yeah, exactly. So, Steve, I think that's a good way to do it, technique. So, yeah, keep it. As long as you know how to do it, it's not really for everybody because the issue of how much premium you're getting and how long is it out there before it expires.
Oh, yeah.
And so it gets complex to, a lot of people have trouble keeping an eye on that stuff and learning and understanding what's going on. For anybody who wants to do it that's familiar and comfortable with it, yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Let's have a conversation about your money. Could you be getting better performance from your 401k? Do you know what your performance is? I think a lot of people don't even know. 888-99-CHART is how to get through. You can do it right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Okay, remember, we love beginner questions, so we welcome your question at 888-99-CHART. Now, what is the question?
You told us some time ago a couple of methods to figure the value of a stock. Would you repeat those for me?
Certainly. I'd be happy to, Jay. There's two very easy ways. Now, these, of course, are not the only ways, Jay.
Yeah.
But these are two very easy, quick ways to do it so you can get an idea if you're overpaying or underpaying for a stock. The first one is takes next year's earnings per share. Next year's earnings per share. Let's say it's $1 per share next year. Not this year, the future. You want to know what the future is. And let's say that earnings per share grew 20%. So this year, maybe the earnings per share is 85 cents, and next year it's going to be $1, and it grew about 20%.
Okay.
All you do is take 20, that percent, 20, the number 20, times next year's earnings per share of $1, and that stock is worth about $20.
Where do you get those numbers?
There's a number of places. They're all over the internet. You go to MSN Money. You can go to Yahoo Finance. And all these will give you earnings projections for next year and tell you what the earnings are this year per share.
I see.
And then all you do is look at it and say, oh, okay. They may not give you the percentage, But they'll tell you, okay, the company made 72 cents per share this last year, and the analysts expected to go to earn $1.20 next year. Well, gee, well, how much is that? That's 50 cents. That's about an 80% increase.
Yep.
80 times next year's earnings per share. That's the stock price. That's the number one. The second one is you should never pay more than about 2 times the market capitalization for the sales that the company is making. So let's say the company is selling $1 billion worth of product.
Yep.
And the total market capitalization is $5 billion. What is a market capitalization? Simple number. It's a number of shares outstanding times the price of the shares. That number is $5 billion, and they're only selling $1 billion. That means that's more than 2 times sales. That's not a very good number. Never pay more than 4 times sales. That's a very bad number. So that just gives you an idea of the overall bigness and how much sales to relationship is. And that's important relationship. Those are 2 ways to evaluate a stock.
Very fine.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to Eddie in Sacramento. Hi, Eddie. How you doing?
Good afternoon. Hmm? If it's not going to teach me how to make money in the market, where in the heck do I find out the information and get the knowledge that investors acquire?
Very good question. You need to start reading. I know that doesn't sound exciting, but I'll give you a couple of books that you can look at that you can get out of the library or buy, and it's kind of for the beginners, very easy reads by people who have been in the industry, who've been very successful, and they're written in a fashion to try to give you a feel for how this works.
Okay.
Go to our website at vesttalk.com. A couple of very good books is 1,000 Miles from Wall Street by Tony Gray. And if you can't write these down, you can go to our website. We record our shows at besttalk.com, and you can listen to it. Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits by Kenneth Fitcher. And Peter Lynch has a very good book, Beating the Wall Street. Or I would suggest you start with those books. They're very easy, and it kind of gives you a good idea of how this stuff works. And if I can give you one kind of rule of thumb, buy stocks that make money. There's too many story stocks, too many hot tips. Don't do any of that.
Uh-huh.
Buy stocks that have good earnings and are growing their earnings. That's a very simple thing to do. And you can find that out by most websites. So I started trying to read a little bit on some of these books, get a feel for how the market works and why this stock or that industry works and goes up. And you really can teach yourself if you have the interest.
What kind of money can a person expect to make in the market?
There is an element and a feeling of gambling in the stock market. There is that there. Think about it this way. When you're buying a stock, you're buying a piece of that company. If that company is making a lot of money, you're the owner of that company. The action of the stock price may go up or down. You don't know. But if the company is making money over a period of time, the price of stock may fluctuate differently than the earnings. So what you want to do is focus on the earnings, because eventually the stock price will go up to reflect that increased earnings. It may take time. People think they can get in, get rich quick, and then get out. That's not how it is in the stock market. That's how it was in the 1990s, but not anymore. The stock market is going to return you, on average, 10% a year, including dividends, because it has for 70 years. Okay?
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278. You remember a couple of days ago, I was talking about the malls, the big box stores are hurting, and they're going to have to change. The malls are going to have to metamorphose. Well, there was an article the very next day, and one I wanted to talk about yesterday briefly, and a bunch of malls are defaulting on their loans, and the banks are taking over the malls, and this is happening more and more. It dramatically increased in 2016 from 2015, and it's probably going to be a continuing problem. And this is what I mean, that these malls are going to be suffering. They're going to have to find a new model. And probably it's going to be about food. Specialty, high-end food, kiosks kind of thing, small boutique kind of restaurants, that kind of thing. Excuse me. This is InvestTalk. Remember, we're not all stocks and bonds. It's been said that the debt is the act of borrowing from your future self, and the penalty is interest. Want to talk about debt? Do you have a lot of debt? 888-99-CHARGE. You can reach me right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Jim in Indiana. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. Yourself, Steve?
Good. You want to talk about one of my favorite subjects, or our favorite books, anyways?
Yeah, Creative Destruction. And I really like this concept. And it actually, the question came into my head because of a caller yesterday. They called about how can you tell if a company is about to go into bankruptcy. He was talking about Pearson, PSO.
Right. Yes, uh-huh.
And I guess my question is, how can you tell when a company is adapting to a new business model? Because here's why I ask this. I do a lot with state standardized assessment in our state. And Pearson is our testing vendor. They have a huge contract. They also have contracts with a lot of other states, and the test delivery contractor for the PARC test, which is incorporates a whole bunch of states. I guess the question is, and they're transitioning to all online assessments, and their backbone and infrastructure is really good. So to me, that one looks like one that could be coming back. I guess that's the question. How can you tell? So, I mean, I guess you really have to look into the whole of the business to tell how they're adapting, but
one of the ways is look at where they're spending their money, the research and development. Where are they putting money? Are they putting it toward improving their old way of doing business, thinking that, well, if we just print faster these books, or are they using their money toward the internet, online delivery of tests, online delivery of texts? You know, if they're moving toward that and they're making a big push, then they'll probably survive, because a lot of companies do survive by adapting. If they adapt, and they got to be an adapter to that, they can't just kind of like pay it a passing fancy. You got to really do it. They will survive. So whenever you see that happen, Walmart is also another example, by the way. How much money they're putting toward their online business? I mean, we're talking billions.
Yeah.
Because they know they're losing out to Amazon. So they are pushing hard to keep up with what they know is coming and has been coming for some time. So Pearson is pushing hard into the online servicing of whatever it is, testing or the textbooks, whatever. Then you know you have a shot. They're still in an industry that is being destroyed. But are they, and you just never know for sure, Jim. You never know for sure who's going to be the winners. But at least you want to see the CEOs and making the effort to stay pertinent in this environment.
Right.
So that's all that you do.
And I know that they're also UK-based, and I don't know if that has an influence on that price with everything that's going on with Brexit and you know, all of the things going in with the UK right now and all their changes in laws. And I think there was a court case recently that affects that as well. I'm assuming that that's probably factoring into that stock price as well, or is that just assumption that I'm making incorrectly?
No, you're correct. Nothing's in a vacuum. So yeah, that has something to do with it. Jim, thanks for the call. Very good question.
Okay. Paul in Point Richmond. How you doing, Paul?
Very good. Thank you. I'm approaching retirement, and I'm pretty well diversified, but I have $100,000. I'm afraid to really risk market right now. I'm in a money market. It's at 3%.
Okay.
I'm thinking I don't know where else to go. I'm afraid of REITs. I'm afraid of the high yield market. I just think I may leave it sit there until, say, bonds go higher in terms of yield, and then invest in a bond.
Can I give you a better way to go without taking any risk?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you heard me talk about laddering before.
Yes.
Okay, how about taking that $100,000 and divide it up into maybe, let's say, 10 parts, $10,000 each?
Okay.
You could do CDs or you can do treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what you do is you go out like 6 months. Well, when do you think interest rates will go up? Maybe 3 months?
Yeah.
Okay, first one due in 3 months. Go out 3 months. The next one, 6 months. The next one, 9 months. The next one, 1 year. Then 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. What you do is you keep ladder them out to the longer, so you keep going out far, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go out only maybe 3 to 4 years,
okay?
So now, as interest rates rise, the first 10,000 comes due, you go out for like 3 years. And that'll give you the highest rate for 3 years, right?
Right.
Then the next one, that now 6 months later, you're going to go out another 3 years. So 3 years and 3 months, the second one would come to you. You see how I'm doing that?
Uh-huh.
What this does, it's called a ladder. If interest rates rise, you're getting more and more return. And over the long haul, if interest rates continue to rise, you will make more money. And it's very safe.
Okay.
You can do it that way. You know, if you lock up a CD for a year or 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and interest rates go up in between, you're not really maximizing your gain. You are maximizing your security, you know, if you're safe.
Yeah.
But the ladder idea is not that hard, really. When it comes up for renewal, you just got to tell the bank, you can do it by phone or whatever. They'll do it automatically over the phone. Tell them what you want.
What portion of that should I have available to pay tax on that income?
Well, what you do is you make sure that you have one come due a little bit before April 15th.
Okay. Yep.
That way you know, it. Okay, here's $10,000. Okay. Well, how much do I need to pay taxes?
All right.
Paul, that's a good question.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks very much.
We're heading into part two of our Friday Invest Talk show, everybody. Plenty of time to get your questions in. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART. So if you want to talk to me live between 4 and 5 Pacific time, now's the time to do it. 888-992-4278.
Our podcast will continue next.
Is it possible that your retirement portfolio is taking more risk than you feel good about? Our life situation, age, temperament, they're all factors in measuring our tolerance for risk.
Losing sleep over it, getting emotional about it.
The challenge is to understand your capacity for risk.
How does your risk profile fit in with your entire financial picture?
InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein want you to have the advantage of being able to actually measure your capacity for risk. And then?
We'll take your portfolio and plug it in if you want us to. See how it matches up with your risk tolerance.
They've teamed up with a nationally recognized software developer to bring you a free risk analysis tool based on Nobel Prize winning formulas that you can actually use anytime.
And it's all free.
It's all free.
To use it now, just go to investtalk.com. That's investtalk with two T's, investtalk.com. From KPP Financial on investtalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
And let's go to Mark in San Bernardino. Hi, Mark.
What are the pros and cons of investing in ETFs versus an index mutual fund? For instance, the spiders versus your typical S&P 500 mutual fund.
In an index fund, remember, you're paying a manager to sit on buying the stocks in an index, the S&P 500 or the Dow or the NASDAQ 100, whatever it is. In a mutual fund, you're paying a manager to sit on those. Your fee is usually much higher than the ETF, like the spiders, the SPY is the S&P 500, the QQQ, there's NASDAQ 100, and the diamonds, DIA, is the Dow Jones 30. The cost is much less, and you can buy and sell them during the day, just like a stock. Whereas a mutual fund, you only get the price at the end of the day. My personal opinion is if you're going to buy index funds, you should probably just go ahead and buy the spiders or the diamonds or the Qs. If you're going to buy an index fund, why not? Appreciate the call.
All right, thank you.
Very good call, Mark. Thanks. Marty, Tracy, how you doing?
Yeah, my question is on stocks that have like a 12-month cycle. If you were to buy those like when they're like, say, at the low end and some at the high end, do you have to keep them for at least a year in order to pay less capital gains tax? Or?
Yes. The rule is, Marty, that within 12 months, if you buy and sell a stock within 12 months, you have to pay, if you have a gain, you pay the tax rate of your ordinary income tax rate. If you hold it for 12 months or longer, then it reverts to 15%. You never have to pay more than 15%. So if you're coming up close to 12 months on something, you know, you kind of like, you got to weigh, should I sell it? Maybe I should hold on to it for another few days or a few weeks, you know.
Exactly, because I've been looking at a lot of stocks that do that, and I'm just curious if I should try to get into them. I'm waiting for them to be at their lows.
Be wise to wait to buy them at good buy point. You know, the overall rule, Marty, is always buy the stock at a good buy point. You know, taxes will take care of themselves. You don't worry about that until you get close to the 12 month. Then you start thinking about it. Okay, Marty, appreciate the call.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's see, what do we want to talk about? Let's talk about questions you need to ask yourself. So do you have enough knowledge to manage your own portfolio? That's really the issue. Do you have that knowledge? Okay, so the first question is, in your 401k, which a lot of people have, or any other account, do you know what you own? Do you know what will push what you own up or down? You know what sectors you're in? You know what percentage of your portfolio are in the different sectors? Are you all overloaded in one sector? Do you even want to take the time to find out? Know yourself. If you don't want to take the time to find out, then you should probably, especially in your 401ks, just stick with the indexes. If you have an independent account outside of those, then you could stick with the indexes or hire somebody, if you don't have any desire to do it yourself. Okay, if you hire somebody, have you looked at their ADV? Check them out? And you talk to anybody else, maybe somebody that, a reference? You know, you really need to find out. Of course, you realize I'm talking about me, right? I'm talking about me and everybody else in my industry. Don't just hire them, you know, check them out a little bit. Do you understand when I talk about diversification, do you understand what that really means? Or is it just a term that you think you know what it means, but you're not going to do it anyways because it sounds too hard? Do you know how your money manager is paid? Your investment advisor, how he gets paid? We've been talking about back-end loaded mutual funds and front-end loaded funds and 12b1 funds and, you know, commissions. How does he get paid? Remember, he's got to get paid. I have to get paid. I got salaries and, you know, everything just like every other businessman. But you really should know how he gets paid. That should be up front. He should be telling you that. Those are some of the things you need to be asking. You know, so, and many people don't know these things. But you should. That's your job. It's your money. You got to grow it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Learn how to capitalize on economic and political shifts in this new year. Investing is all about looking ahead. We learn what we can from the past, but the question is always, what are we going to do with tomorrow? How to prosper in the year of change, 2017. This most recent webinar is now ready to replay when you're ready. That's just one of a whole library of recorded webinars with Steve and Justin that you can access anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Why not sign up? It's free on InvestTalk.com.
Hello, my name is Kim. I have a question on spousal IRA. I am retired and I am not working, and I was wondering if I can open up a spousal IRA, and I'd like to hear more about information on spousal IRA. Thank you.
Okay, and the answer is yes. If you're not working as a spouse and but your spouse is, yes, you can open up an IRA even though you don't have earned income. As long as there's earned income from your spouse. Now, if you ask me any more details than that, I'm going to have to say you got to talk to your accountant, because it's not my area expertise. But I do know, yes, you can do that. How do I know that? Because I did that with my wife. She, you know, I do that. I've done that. So that's how I know. It is done. It can be done. And yes, and the amount you can put away is the same amount as a normal IRA. And they call them a spousal IRA because even though they're really your IRA, it's not your spouse's IRA, it's yours. They call them that because one of the married couple has to be working to have earned income. Remember, you can't open up an IRA without earned income. Well, if a spouse doesn't work, well, you still can open up an IRA for that person that's not working, as long as the partner is. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The GDP number came out for the fourth quarter. It was up 1.9%. That was not very good. It expected a not-so-hot 2.2%, and it came in below that. Year over year, for the year, 1.6% GDP growth. That is pretty small. That is very disappointing, really. What is our average over long periods? 3.3%. We haven't seen 3% since 2005. We haven't seen 3% GDP since. Why is that? We should be seeing it. And this is probably one of the reasons why people feel that we're not doing very well, because that number kind of supports that thinking. Despite, quote unquote, full employment jobs and stuff, it just feels like it because we're not growing, and our productivity is slow too. You add those two together and it doesn't feel like we're doing very good. Now, one of the reasons why the GDP number was so low is because imports spiked up 8.3%. And this is a problem. Remember when we're talking about trade deficit. And if we import a lot more than we export, and of course our high dollar was a problem with that, what happens is that detracts from your GDP growth. Even though sales by consumers was decent, and all the numbers were decent except for the import numbers spiked, so it dragged down our GDP number. So that's what that report, and then you add on that, you want to add a little bit more insult to injury. The durable goods report was negative too, and they expected that to be positive a couple percentage points, and it came in shrinking to 0.4%, and that's after shrinking big time last month, so you had 2 months in a row. It's not so good. But then again, if you take out airplanes and vehicles, it was up about 0.8%. So it wasn't as bad as it looked. All these numbers tell us what they've been telling us for some time. We're growing. We're just not growing very good. We're adding jobs, but we're just not growing very well. We're just not.
Okay, remember, we love beginner questions. Everyone who listens to this program either is a beginner or was one at that one time. So we welcome your question at 888-99-CHART. Now, what is the question?
Is that when you hear a company say it's going to buy its own stock back, that's a good thing.
Yes.
But let's say the company's current stock price is $20. What price are they buying their own stock back?
They usually buy it in the open market, just like you would do that.
Right.
What they do, if you pay attention, David, they say, we're going to buy back $500 million worth of our own stock.
Right.
They'll say, we'll do that over the next year, 2 years, 5 years. They'll tell you the length of time.
Oh, okay.
And they will say that. And then they don't just go out and buy it like tomorrow. No, 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 no. And sometimes they'll buy it when they think it's the right time to buy it on low prices. Or the most common thing is they look for a downturn in that stock price, and they'll buy it then to try to hold the price up.
Do they like dollar cost average their own stock then?
They might buy $100 million today and then wait 6 months and buy another $200 million then. It's totally up to them, and they don't tell you what their plan is in detail.
Oh, okay. So has their plan ever been to drive their own stock price down purposely to buy shares?
Most of the time, no. It's to drive it up.
I mean to buy their stock back at a cheaper price.
No, they have no way to drive it down. They can't manipulate it. In other words, that would be very bad, and they would get in a lot of trouble by the SEC.
Oh, yeah, right. But, these guys get in trouble all the time for doing crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah. If your answer is could they, the answer is yes.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, they could, sure.
Yeah, they certainly could. They generally don't. And you'll also find that they'll announce a buyback program, and they'll say they'll buy it back within 2 years, and 2 years pass, and they didn't fulfill their agreement to buy back their stocks. Sometimes they don't do what they say they're going to do, too.
Now, wouldn't they get in trouble for that? Because it sounds like that when you mention you're going to buy your own stock back, that would raise the price of the stock up.
You would think so. But they'll have reasons like we had better uses of the money. Maybe we wanted to put the money to buy in a new company. That was an opportunity. You know, they'll come up with something. But I've seen them announce buybacks and then not actually follow through with the whole buyback.
Yeah, that's not
right. No. Appreciate it, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.
Thanks.
Bye.
We're going to go to Gordon in Escondido. How are you doing, Gordon?
Well, great. And I'm really happy that you took my call and that I wish I could have known about you guys a long time ago.
Oh, well.
I've just been listening the last about 4 months, so I'm using it as my education.
Well, great. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just got 2 daughters through college, and now I've got to take care of myself. The Teamsters Union took our retirement some time ago, so I'm really just starting all over. And one of my questions is I only get to listen to you on bits and pieces in between my work, and I'm a sole proprietor on, I do construction, I'm just, do a lot of handyman stuff. How much can I put in the Roth IRA first?
Are you over 50?
63.
So. Oh, gosh, you don't sound that old. That's great. The reason why I asked if you're over 50, because you get what's called a step up. It's $4,500 at age 50 and over. It's $4,000 under. But if you're self-employed, you can also open up like a SEP IRA. Now you're talking $12,000, $13,000.
Yeah, because I feel like I need to pack in as much as I can in the time that I have.
That's probably a smart thing, yes. And you have to start taking it at age 70 and a half. You know that, right?
Oh, at 70. Wow. That's
70 and a half, you have to start taking out of the traditional IRA. At 70 and a half, excuse me, you don't have to take any of it ever out of the Roth. But at a traditional IRA, you have to start taking it at 70 and a half.
Okay. I need to make as much as possible so I can get you to invest the rest.
That's right. I'd love to do that for you. Yeah, we have aggressive and moderately conservative portfolios, depending on which one you want.
Yeah, I like you guys. I've listened to you. I'm really, I think you guys are right on. Yeah.
Gordon, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you for taking it, and I appreciate your program.
Thank you, Gordon. I appreciate that, too. 888-99-CHART. Okay. Let's talk about mortgages for 2017. What's gonna change in 2017? Well, refinancing is probably going to dry up. It's pretty much dried up already because mortgage rates have moved up to about 4%. So everybody who had half a brain has already refinanced their mortgage the last couple of few years, trying to get the lowest prices they can get. So now as it starts to rise, there's going to be fewer and fewer people that will want to refinance. Okay. You may be wanting to refinance to get rid of the PMI because housing prices have gone up. So remember, if you don't put 20% down, you need 20% equity into the property. So if the value has gone up, you might be able to get rid of that PMI. So check that out. See if you have a 20% equity in the property. 2017, try to do that. Rates are going to rise in 2017, especially if the stock market does well, because the Fed will just increase the rates. They're going to increase the rates if the economy and the stock market look decent. They've signaled that they're going to raise them 3 times this year. I don't know if they'll do that, but they are signaling they're going to raise the rates, and it definitely will happen with the stock market going up. And finally, expect the guidelines to qualify for loans to loosen up a little bit. Now, why do I say that? Because banks want the deals. They are in business to make money. Trump has promised a reduction of red tape, but that isn't why they would do it, but it helps. But they'll loosen the banks will loosen the guidelines a little bit simply because they want the business. So expect that. That's probably going to happen this year. Okay, so those are the things that, you know, the real estate, getting a mortgage in 2017, some of the changes you might see. You're listening to Invest Talk. The invitation is always open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99-CHART. You can call that number anytime you want. Any questions is welcome anytime.
Why are earnings so important? What does that mean, earnings per share? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk. You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Let's go to Carlos in Stockton.
I'm 22 years old, have a pretty good job, and I've been interested recently in, like, e-trading. I really don't know nothing about it.
Yeah, online trading on it. Yeah. Okay.
I have money to play with, but, you know, I just don't know the steps, and I really don't know nothing about it.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. So you have to start to educate yourself a little bit. You know, anybody can go and buy a stock they heard about on TV, you know, or read about in a newspaper. But you'll be investing with the total lack of knowledge. You wouldn't know if when do you sell. You know, what stocks you should buy. You're buying stocks because someone else said it was a good stock and you're just buying it. That's not a good way to invest. You already made the first step, Carlos, by saying I have the interest. You have to start somewhere. And you're only 22. You're a young guy. You know, you're just now getting involved now. Peter Lynch has a pretty easy book to read, okay? It's called Beating the Street. It's only about 200 pages. It's pretty simple. It tells you how he invests. It talks about invest in stocks that you know, like you're at the store and you see some product that you saw that is just selling like hotcakes, like maybe Nike tennis shoes or something.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about very, very fundamental, easy stuff to just pay attention to the things around you, and then you start there. That book is a very good book to start. It's a beginner book. It's by Peter Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. As Beating the Street. It's a very, very good book for a beginner. And, you know, Carlos, come to our conferences. You just need to start listening to this show. You'll see that I'll talk about basics. And I'll tell you one thing, Carlos, that is true no matter what. Stocks go up if their earnings go up. I know it sounds simple. It really is simple. But there's so many stocks that people buy where they don't have any earnings or have any hope of earnings, or it's just a story that sounds good, but over the long haul, all stocks go up if their earnings go up. So they have to have their sales go up and their earnings per share. And everything's done in earnings per share. There's so many shares in the stock. You know, if it has a million shares, what is its earnings per share? It's a dollar per share. If it makes a dollar per share this year, it's going to make $1.20 per share next year, and it makes another $1.50 the year after. That stock will eventually go up because the earnings are going up. So there's just one cardinal rule. If I could beat that into your head, you will be successful over the long haul.
That's what I'm talking about.
Let's start with the earnings. If earnings go up, then the stock will go up. And you can get that earnings almost anywhere on the net. Carlos, good luck, and keep tuned into the station, and I think you'll pick it up. It just takes some time, that's all.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Carlos. Have a great day.
Okay, the biggest visible threat to the stock market in 2017, the biggest visible threat to the market. And I say visible because anything could come out of left field and we don't know. And that it will be a trade war. Okay, that's the biggest visible threat because of Trump's stance on insisting on different renegotiating deals that we have with current trade partners. And, you know, for instance, we have $60 billion deficit, a trade deficit with Mexico alone. And so he wants them to pay for the wall. And so what does that mean? He nicks the Pan-Pacific trade treaty, so now he's going to negotiate country by country. What does that mean? Well, there'll be a trade war. That's what we're talking about. And that's remember that what is the trade war? Who's going to punish it the most will be the multinationals, right? And most of the stocks in the S&P 500 are multinational stocks. So their earnings are going to be impacted. Therefore, the S&P 500 will go down if there's a trade war. No doubt in my mind, they will. So this is the biggest possible threat. And remember, the war doesn't actually have to happen. What has to happen is investors believe that it might happen and the stock market will go down. Right now, they don't have that belief at all. They don't think not happening. At least that's not what they're thinking at this point. But we'll see. We'll see if it gets more contentious as we go forward. And if you never read Trump's book called The Art of the Deal, this is, came out a long time ago. What he is doing is exactly how he conducts business as stated in that book. He takes a hard line. He's a tough negotiator. And then he comes back and tries to make a deal. He nixes the deal or says it's not good enough. He comes back again and again and again until he gets what he wants. That's how he operates. This should not be a surprise to anybody who's read his book. Now, I read his book years and years and years ago when it came out. And it was pretty interesting. You wouldn't want to be on the opposite side of him on a deal. He's very tough. Very tough. Even when he doesn't have the advantage or it doesn't look like he has an advantage, and I just remember the Atlantic City deal with the banks that he owed a lot of money to, he still came out smelling like a rose, and they were filing bankruptcy at his hotels. Anyways, our time is up for the hour, everybody. Here's something to think about. The person with the mind of a successful investor is always looking to the long term and not strictly what feels good at the moment. If you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, send me a note. Just go to contact Steve on investtalk.com. That's an email that comes directly to me. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP, thanks for being with us today.